This week is Parashas Bo. Next week is Parashas B'Shalach. It's a cute little vart. Mitzvah Bo Yoser Mi B'Shluchai. Mitzvah Bo Yoser Mi B'Shluchai. So more of a mitzvah for you to do it yourself than there is to do it through someone else. So we have two parashas. Which one is the more important parasha? Parashas Bo, Parashas B'Shalach. Mitzvah Bo. The Mitzvah Bo, even though Bo was spelled with an Aleph and Bo was spelled with a Vav, Mitzvah Bo Yosem Yibishlucho, because in Parshas Bo is when it began. The Aschalta de Geula. The Aschalta de Geula is the time of Chavivas. Parshas B'Shalach, we're already free. It was just a question of crossing the Yarden. But the moment of Yitzias Mitzrayim, that moment when you leave Mitzrayim, there's no greater simcha than the time of the Yitzilut Pesach night. When we celebrate the Yitzias Mitzrayim, we celebrate it on with the first day of Pesach, which corresponds to Yitzias Mitzrayim, and we celebrate Shvi Yishol Pesach, which corresponds to Kriyas Yamsof. So let me ask, between the two, which one is more chaviv? Of course, the first day of Pesach. The first day of Pesach is when we have the Seder, when the family comes together, the mitzvah of the Hav Hagodah, the Dalu Koisais, Achilas Matzvah, the Chavivas of the Yitziah, of the moment of Yitziah, is something that you cannot replicate. Mitzvah Bo, Yoyitzah Mibishlucho, the Chavivas and Parshas Bo, is more chaviv than the chavivus of Parshas B'Shalach. I think the reason why this bar was invented was because people have a tendency to think, oh, Shabbos Shira. You can't wait until it comes to Shabbos Shira. Shabbos Shira, you sing Oz Yoshir, and there are so many beautiful minhagim of what we do on Shabbos Shira. We lane it with a special nigun, and it's also the parsha of the mon, and we put out food for the birds. There are so many things that we do, and it also coincides very often with Tu B'Shvat. Parashas B'Shalach is the parasha which gets all the limelight. And Parashas Bo, nu, another parasha, another parasha, making a mistake. Mitzvah Bo Yoseh Mibishlucho. The real Chavivos of the Yitzhiyah of Mitzrayim should not underestimate that this week, Parashas Bo, is the essence, is the meat and potatoes of what our whole religion is based on. This. What? So,
I
think it's the Makas Bechoros. Makas Bechoros is really the Iker. Makas Bechoros, it builds up. But Makas Bechoros and the Yitzhiyah of Klal Yisrael, this was the fulfillment of the promise to Hashem, to Avraham Avinu. I think most of everything that it leads to, most of all the ideas come to the actual moment of Yitzhiyah. Everything happened in this week's parasha. This is the Yikar. The moment of Yitzhiyah, when the Haftachas were fulfilled to the Avos, when Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us the mitzvah of Achodesh Zer Lachem Rosh Chodoshim, Akas Bechoros. Don't be misled to think that only next week that's when the big event, the big show. It's not so. The nice little drush. Mitzvah Bo Yoyser Mibishlucha.
On the other hand, he mentions that by Aminu Bashem, Moshe Abdo happened by Kriyas Yamsuf, and he focuses on that phrase, how come now all of a sudden?
Why?
But the answer is that he claims is that they finally saw closure, because if they left and didn't see the army being vanquished totally,
right. You need, it's not necessary.
Over your shoulder for the rest of your life.
You need that element.
And that's when they finally felt free that the Mitzrayim were vanquished totally.
Absolutely.
There's another thing.
Okay, now I just want to put another drush. Starting with Parashas Bo, we go through for the next couple of weeks a remes to all of the Mo'adim. For example, in Parashas Bo, this is the parasha of the first day of Pesach. In fact, the laning on Pesach comes from this week's parasha. All of the events that happened on the first day of Pesach are recorded in Parashas Bo. Next week, Parashas B'Shalach are all of the events of Shvi Yishol Pesach. Next, after B'Shalach comes Parashas Yisro. Yisro is the parasha of Matan Torah, Shavuos. Then comes Parashas Mishpatim. Mishpat has the connotation of judgment. Mishpat. What's the next holidays in our calendar? Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is the Tkufa What are we looking like?
Mishpatim.
The Eilah HaMishpatim. Mishpat. Right, it's not mentioned, but just the title of the parasha of Mishpat shakes up a person. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Adad Yimei Hadin. The Eilah HaMishpatim Asher Tosim Lefneiah. After we go to Mishpatim, we then come to Parshas Truma. Truma is the Mishkan. The Mishkan is a shelter. That's the next holiday. It's Sukkot. After Truma comes to Tetzaveh. Tetzaveh Yata Tetzaveh V'yichu Elech HaShemen Zayizach is Chanukah. And then comes to Parshas Kisisa. Kisisa is the Shkolim. And this is a little bit forced, but Hashem says the only reason why we survived the miracle of Purim is because we gave the Machzah Shekel before Haman gave the 10,000 talents of silver to Achashverosh for the Jewish people. So starting from this week, Parshas Bo, through Parshas Kisisa, the Mefarshim, the Darshanim, see a remez to all of the Moadim, the major Moadim. This week again is the first day of Pesach. Parash B'Shalach is the seventh day of Pesach. Parashas Yisro is Rosh. Yisro is Shavuos. Parashas Mishpatim is Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Parashas Truma is the Mishkan, the building of the Mishkan, which is the shelter like a sukkah. Parashas Tetzaveh is then the holidays Midrabanan is Chanukah, and Kisisa is a remes to Patu Purim. So we're starting at Kufa now of going through all of the Moadim. Okay, let's go to something a little more serious. We come here to the mitzvah, the mark of Barat. Hayom Hashem Moshe Bo El Paro Ki Ani Hichpati Es L'Sibo V'Yaslev Avodav L'Man Shisi Ososai Ela B'Kivah. There are two questions that we want to focus on. The Mefarshim take note that nowhere in this parasha, in the beginning of the mark of Arbeh, do we ever find HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling Moshe to warn Paro that the mark of Arbeh will come upon them. Moshe goes to Paro, he just goes Boel Paro, and he warns Paro, Ki imo'enato lishalech esami hinini mevi mochor arbeh bigvulecha. How did Moshe know that the eighth makah is Arbeh? Every single one of the makos until Arbeh, Hashem says, go to Paro and tell them tomorrow there's going to be Dam. Tomorrow there's going to be Tzvardeya. Then Kinim, there's no warning. Hashem just brings it. Hashem brings the Kinim.
369.
Then every mako until Moshe does not do anything on his own. Hashem tells him either to do it, or Hashem tells Moshe, go to Paro and tell him, if you don't behave, if you don't let the Jewish people leave, then this specific makah will come upon you. The only time we find that Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Paro and he warns him about a makah where there is no record anywhere in the psukim beforehand that this specific makah will come upon him and his people is the makah of Arbeh. Hashem telling Moshe. All we find here in this pasuk in Parashas Bo, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Bo el Paro, go to Paro and tell him that you're hardening your, I've hardened your ki yichbarati yaslibu. Hashem says to Moshe, do not worry, I've hardened his heart, he's not going to let you go. Ulamat is saper, and then Vidatem ki ani Hashem, Vayomer Moshe v'yaron el Paro, Vayomer elov klei ma Hashem elokeihu ivrim ad masameyanto leinos mipunai shlachem v'yavdu nikiyim ad minatol shlechasmi hinini mevi mochor arbe bigvulecha. How do you know, Moshe Rabbeinu? Who told you the big secret that the eighth mark is going to be Arbe? This is a major, major question. All the commentators are baffled. How did Moshe know the next mark is Arbe? So on a very simple level, you have to say that not every single detail of the conversation between Hashem and Moshe is recorded in the Pasuk. Hashem told Moshe privately that the next mark is Arbe, and this is what you shall tell Paro, and the Psukim only record bits and pieces of information, not every single detail. Detail of the conversation. That is the simplest answer to this question. However,
excuse me, but the first pasuk you have the same thing. It doesn't make your words left out the first pasuk. Yomar toel paro ki ani echbadati.
Right. Say that. You're missing, but here
paro ki ani echbadati. It doesn't make sense. The sentence, the structure is missing.
No, I don't think that. I think those words Hashem is speaking to Moshe. Okay, so there are things that are definitely left out. There's no question about it. So we're just going to add this to the list. There are many parts of the conversation that were left for the Midrashim or left to tradition. So we're going to add this detail. But it is a little bit of difficulty because it's such a major thing. This is a major, major event. One of the ten Makos. And how could it be omitted from the Psukim in such an open way? So some of the commentators want to suggest that it really is hinted to in the very first pasuk of the parsha, Bo El Paro. Paro is spelled with four letters, Pei, Resh, Ayin, Hey. We know that the Pei and the Beis are very similar. Sometimes we are allowed, there for purposes of Jewish, to exchange the letter Pei with the letter Beis. For example, in Aramaic, many times in Aramaic, the letter Beis turns into a Pei, and the letter Pei turns...
The F and the B.
The letter Beis turns into a Pei, like Barzel. The Pei there, for example, the word Barzel. Barzel means iron. In Aramaic, it's spelled Parazila. The Bei turns
in
Bays turns into a pay. In a Sefer Torah in Ksav Ashuris, in the inside of the letter pay is an invisible bays. Next time you get an aliyah, you look at all the pays, inside the pay is an invisible bays. Okay, and Aleph, the Aleph is interchanged. We all know that the Aleph can be interchanged with the letter Ayin. Aleph and Ayin have the same sound, so we can exchange an Aleph and an Ayin. So if we want to be very, if you want to find a remes that the next mark is going to be Arbe, Bo El Paro. The letters Beis Aleph shall enter into Paro and take their appropriate location. The letter Beis can only be exchanged with the letter Pei, and the letter Aleph can only be exchanged with the letter Ayin. So when we exchange the Paro with, Paro now turns into Beis, Resh, Aleph, Hei, which are the same letters as Arbe. This is what it says, and a lot of Svarim say this idea. I don't remember, I can't give you names. So Bo El Paro is the remez. The Bo is entering Paro. Paro will turn into Arbe. Here is where I'm being Merami to Moshe Rabbeinu, that the Makkah, the eighth Makkah, will be the Makkah of Arbe. Okay, that's one approach. However, the Chassam Sofer and others, but the Chassam Sofer says this almost explicitly, says an awesome, awesome Chiddush. His Chiddush is, Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, Moshe, you know, I want you to have some fun. You know what? I already did seven makas.
Yeah, you choose.
It's up to you. Maka number eight, it's on the house. It's on the house. Whatever you want, you can do. Chassam Sofer says this. It doesn't say this in the pasuk. It's not only the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer is taking this. He's taking this from someone. It's not only the Chassam Sofer.
In the Drush or Alav Torah?
I think in the Drush. In Toras Moshe. If I'm not mistaken. Toras Moshe. So it's not only the Chassam Sofer. Moshe Rabbeinu, it's on the house. So I'm giving you an option to select a makah for the eighth makah. And this idea answers many questions, because one of the interesting things about Makas Arbe, it is the only makah that was not supernatural. All the makos were lamala miderech hatev. Blood, water does not turn into blood. Frogs don't multiply miraculously in such a fashion. Kinin, all of these things, they were supernatural. Arbe, locust, this is a natural phenomenon. It happens every so often. Locust, there is a I don't know the terminology, but there is a period of time where locusts come upon the land.
They show up.
So sometimes it's not so bad, sometimes it's worse. So this was exaggerated. This was the worst ever. And indeed, the Pesukim go on to say, I'm warning you, there's going to be an Arba. There'll never be an Arba like this forever. I guarantee such an Arba, like a snowstorm. There's going to be a snowstorm. There's going to be 50 inches of snow. You're not going to have this again, 50 inches of snow in your lifetime. Low, there never was on record 50 inches, and it'll never be again 50 inches. But snow is snow. It's not something which is l'mal miderech hateva. If the conditions are there, it's going to happen al pi derech hateva. So Arba is not a makah that is l'malo miderech hateva to the same degree as the other nine makos. So it makes sense. Why is the makah of Arba different? Because this makah is not being done through HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This makah is being done through Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu selects something natural in this world, which would serve as a source of pain for Paro, of Tsar for Paro, and I will assist you, I will answer your request, and I will exaggerate it to bring the maximum damage to the nation. So Moshe says, if I have a chance to bring a Makkah, and the Makkah is going to be al-derech ha-teva, so what am I going to ask for? A snowstorm? In Egypt it doesn't snow. What am I going to ask for? A drought? They have the Nile. Let me do something which anyway is on their minds, anyway is a concern for the Egyptians. It's now just going to happen in an exaggerated way, which will be the 10th Makkah. Will be the 8th Makkah. Yeah?
It stopped at the border.
Not necessarily, because even today I read an article recently about Arba. There's something linked to this parasha. Is that even in modern times?
Decided border disputes according to the men.
So that's not supernatural. That's also can be explained on derech hateva. Just the Arba at certain. It's not even known today why locusts they stop at certain locations. There are different events in recent times where there was a swarm of Arba, and it stopped. It was a very great concern that it would continue into certain countries, and it didn't go there. It just stopped and stopped. It stopped in certain locations. It's not on the league of lamalam derech hateva equivalent to the other makos. Okay, that yeah. Yes. 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 He's thinking along those lines. Correct. That's the next thing I wanted to say. What is the significance of this? Because there's another unique feature about Arba, and that is Arba is the only makkah which is the hashlama, the conclusion of a previous makkah. Dam, Sfardeya, Kinim, Orov, Dever, Shchin. These makas, they have nothing to do with one another. Each one is 100% independent of the other. Barad destroyed the crop, but only destroyed part of the crop. It did not destroy the chita v'hakusemes nuku. What was the psuk in the endless parasha? The apishta v'hagival loy nuku ki afilois heina. There were certain parts of the crop that were not smitten by the bar. The barad really should have wiped out everything. But being that the barad came at a certain time of the year where certain different types, varieties of have not yet sprouted, those things were spared. They should have been destroyed. It should have been destroyed, because that's what the Makkah is here to do, is to destroy the country. And miraculously, it came at a certain point in time, so it was not destroyed. Along comes the Arba, and the Pasuk makes it very, very clear. What is the purpose of Arba? Es yeser hapleita hanish'eres lochem min habarot. So the Makkah of Arba is unique in this respect, that it was the hashlama, the conclusion of the previous makkah. Now, when we take, let's put some of these things together. Now, things are beginning to make sense over here. Hashem did a makkah. Hashem left over part of the damage from the previous makkah, and now it says, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm not giving you the power to bring upon them a new makkah. You're only, in fact, a human being. You're not a malach elokim. So, therefore, I'm letting you participate, I'm letting you be a partner with me in finishing off the damage, al derech hateva, with the makkah of your choosing.
Or that you could say that Moshe Rabbeinu, being a human being, can't imagine something that's not derech hateva.
And achram.
Think of something that's so outrageous, but Moshe
is limited to
say what to finish off what I already know. Yishmael.
Okay, now, one more point, and then we'll put everything together. One more point. Probably two more points. It is only in regard to the Makkah of Arba where we have this expression, Uleman tisaper be'ozne vincho ven bincho eis asher hisalalti b'mitzrayim. Through this Makkah, you're going to have a topic of conversation with your children and your grandchildren. How I mocked the Egyptians. Why Why in relation specifically to the Makif Arba is there an emphasis of a conversation with your children? Every Makkah you can relate to your children. That's what we do at the Night of the Seder. We talk about all the Makkahs. Last point I want to make is, why does it say the word the S-O-S-O-S-I Asher Samtivam, the signs that I have set in them, in the people of Egypt? Because later in the parasha, when we come to Makas Bechoros, let me jump ahead to Makas Bechoros, in the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Tes, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Lo Yishba Lechem Paro, Leman, Revos Mofesai, the Eretz Mitzrayim. Umoshevi Aaron Asu Es Kol HaMofesim Ho'ele Lefnei Faro. Here in Perek Yud Bey, the end of Perek Yud Aleph, the word used to describe the miracles is the word Mofes. So the question is, why in reference to the market of Arba is the term Os? We discussed this last week. There are two terms used in the Torah to describe miracles: Osos and Mofsim. In regard to the market of Arba, the term the Torah selects is Os. Ulamantis aper v'yozne v'incho ven v'incho eis asher heslat v'imshan v'yes Ososai. Os. But later, when it comes to Makas Bechoros, and there's a review of everything that has happened, everything that's transpired, Moshe v'Aaron also es kol ha-moifsim ho'ele. All of a sudden, when we want to summarize all of the Makos, we choose the term Moifes and not the word Os. So how do all of these ideas come together? So I want to suggest a very simple Yisod. Based upon something that we said last week. What is the difference between an Os and a Moifes? So we discussed this week, a popular idea is that the word Os refers to a sign that you are an authentic agent. A moface is a sign that is a sign from the mishaleach, from the sender, from who that you represent the authority that has sent you. He is authentic and he has a true message to deliver. In other words, so you come and you want to deliver a message. You have something to deliver. So there are two things that you have to prove. Number one, you have to prove that the sender is authentic, the return address is authentic. A moface is something you do to validate the authenticity of the mishaleach. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending Moshe Rabbeinu to do something and Moshe is doing the moface is an indication that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is for real. This is not black magic. This is not kishuf. This is not a source of tumah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is real. A moface is a sign that the mishaleach is authentic. And in this context, the mishaleach is none other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. An os is a sign that I am the agent. I am an authentic representative of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ki pakoid pakadati. I'm not a charlatan. I'm not a faker. I'm not a false Mashiach. I am truly a Kadosh Baruch Hu's. I am a Kadosh Baruch Hu's agent. This is the difference between an os and a mofes. Later in the parsha, when we come to Makas Bechoros and we summarize all of the events, the term that the pasuk uses is the mofsim. Moshe v'Aaron asu es. They've done all of the mofsim, which is meaning that everything they have done has validated, has authenticated that the Ribbono Shel Olam is real and he is serious about the mission of taking out the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. But through the entire story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, every so often Moshe Rabbeinu has to also show, I'm also the real representative. I am the Goyal. Moshe had the code word, Kipo Koipo Kadati. Moshe Rabbeinu, he took the matah turned into a snake. Moshe Shalom authentic. Here, from the 10 Makos, the only Makah, if I'm not mistaken, where the Makah is not only a Moface, but also is a sign of Moshe Rabbeinu, he is an authentic Shaliach, is the Makah of Arba. The Makah of Arba is called an Os. Leman Shisi Ososai Eile. These Osos, which includes here the Makah of Arba. So what is going on over here? So all of these things, they really come together to tell you one idea. Why do we perform the mitzvah of Bris Milah? Just as an example, the Gemara has a discussion where a guy said to one of the Amorayim, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu really wanted a person should have a Bris Milah, so why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a person with Bris Milah? So the answer he gave is HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give a human being an opportunity to be a partner with Hashem in completing, in being mashlim the Bria. Hashem created the world. The world was created with the Shem Shakai. Sh'omar le'olamoi dai. The world should be created in an incomplete form. There's more that is to be done. And the world is 99% complete. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave a human being the opportunity and the ability to do that last 1% to Hashlama, to be Mashlim, the Bria, through Torah and Mitzvahs. Here is exactly what is happening. That's what's happening here in this parsha. Parshas Vo'era ends. Hashem did his. Hashem did 7 makos. And indeed, Paro already reached the Madrega where he said, Hashem hu hatzadik v'ani v'ami horishoim. The 7 makos. And in fact, there's a fascinating chazal. Some of the parshim we want to learn is that Paro was 100% convinced that the makos are over. Because he knew maral. Paro, he learned maral. He had a seder every day learning maral. And he learned in maral that 7 is the number of the Bria. Once you get to 7, it's over. There's no such thing as 8. 8 is l'malo miderech hateva. Hashem only works in terms, is Hashem's number system ends at the number 7. If I got through 7 makas and I'm still standing, and my land and my people are still here, we're damaged, we've been injured, we have been humiliated. Hashem succeeded to the degree at the end of 7 makas, Hashem at tzadik, v'ani v'ami horishoim, but it's over. And I won. It's over, and I won. Parshas Ve'era ends. Paro is still standing. 7 makas are complete. According to the Maral, you can't go past number 7. Hashem, you lose. I've been injured. I've been down. But you lose. Hashem at tzaddik. But I'm still the king of Mitzrayim, and the Jewish people are still my slaves. Enters Parshas Bo. Hashem says to Paro and to Moshe, you know, Paro has a good point. I don't mean to say words of apikorsis. I don't know if it doesn't come out the right way. Hashem says, my role in this world is not to go past 7. My role is complete. Now it's time for you, Moshe Rabbeinu, for you to take over and finish off the job. Because indeed, that's the purpose of this world. Hashem says, what? Well, not all three. Let's just only focus on this makkah, which leads into the ultimate gemar. But it changes the tone. It changes the tone. I'm telling you, it's not completely right. You have the choshech. Choshech is also a very different type of makkah. It's a hachana for makkahs mechoros. It's Hashem is saying to Paro, you know, he's got a good point. Hashem says, I choose in this world to limit myself to some degree. Man has to be my partner to finish off the job. To finish off the job. So Paro thinks it's all over, but you, Moshe Rabbeinu, are you going to finish him off? You're going to be my partner. And therefore, that's why you, Moshe, you select the Makkah. It's up to you. You're going to be the one. And your selection of the Makkah is going to be the Hashlama. Because that's what a human being is here to do. He's here to be Mashlim, to conclude, to complete what Hashem has left for man to do. Hashem did not create a person with a Bris Milah. Hashem wants a person to have a Bris Milah. Hashem did not create a world filled with people. Hashem gave man the ability to be the Isaac in Priya or Via, to fill up the world with Chiv Shua. You, Moshe, you're going to finish off the Geula. And that is going to come out in many different facets, many different dimensions. Number one, it's not going to be a Moifes anymore. It's going to be an Ois. All of the 7 makas until now, it represents the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Meshaleach, the Hashlama, Leman Shisi Oisai Sai Eile. It's going to show who you are. You, the human being, you have the koyach to do to be my partner. What you're going to do, you're going to select it on your own, whatever makkah you want. And the makkah that you're going to select is going to be a hashlama, a shela, the plata, And this koyach of being Hashem's partner is what Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim is all about. Because what I've done, listen, what I've done is no big deal. Yeah?
Now there are two aspects in which this is similar to Bris Mila. One is it's number 8.
Okay, very good.
The other is that it's an os.
It's an oath. Very good. Gewaldic. You should be giving the share. Very good.
What about
the moral?
How is it Hashem?
Yeah. That is once Moshe starts the process, he initiates the process, so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes in for the grand slam.
The original, the psukim that lead into the beginning of the parsha, Lamantis HaPerim Bios Nevin Cho Ben Ben Cho, is that the Makos have a dual purpose. And the first purpose was to punish the Mitzrayim for all the things that they did to the Jews. But it's also these last three makas, what Hashem is telling Moshe is, it's that Bnei Yisrael, the message is to Klal Yisrael, so that they understand what I can do, not to teach the Mitzrayim a lesson now, but it's to show them, be careful, because I want you to know my power, because they're the one that have to live with me.
Okay. Okay. That's part of that's the continuation of the Arba. Arba is opening up now into Choshech and Makas Bukharos. But the Pesach into these two has to come from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu then has to be the partner which opens up the channel to bring in Choshech and Makas Bukharos.
Who says the morale in Vurz Hashem?
This whole word?
Yeah.
No.
No.
You're not going to find it there. Sorry.
Who says it there?
We're developing this together.
Two things.
Os versus Moifes. Okay, so this is the insight. That's why it's a new parsha. Is everyone asked the same question? Why are we breaking up the Makkah? 7 and now 3. We're stopping in the middle of the story. What's going on over here? It's a new tekufa. Last week was the Ribbono Shel Olam, he did his. And the parasha, the makas really come to an end. Hashem HaTzadik V'ani V'ami HaRashoim, but I still win. I still have won. The makas are over. I'm here. The Bnei Yisrael have not left Mitzrayim. I won. Comes Parshas Bo. Bo El Paro. That's right. I let Paro win because that's how I designed the world. I designed the world with the koyach of tzimtzum. Tzimtzum. I hold myself back. Sha'omar le'olam oydai. Because I want to give man the ability to be mashlim, to do the hashlama. Moshe, you're in the driver's seat. You select the makkah.
That's really the rumors in the word boy. It's borrowed in Arabic.
Borrowed. Both, okay, that's a remes. Okay, but it's a shlom.
You finish off.
Finish off what I've included. You select whatever you want. And what you're going to select is hashlama.
He looked in the maral, he didn't look in the stick.
He looked in the maral, not in the stick.
Before it gets into the whole idea, how was the matter written if this was all. So it has a problem how it was written, not the way it looks.
Okay, let's go to another idea. I saw this idea. This is not my idea. I'm trying to break my mind open to remember where I saw the following idea. I saw this. I can't remember where I saw this idea. Maybe I saw this in Rav Bick. I think maybe Rav Bick. They put out a couple of years ago all of his drashas. The Rav in Borough Park, Rav Moshe Bick. No, Rav Moshe Bick, the one that was nifted, the older Moshe. I think I saw it there. Maybe I didn't see that. Maybe I saw someone. I don't remember. There's a very interesting diak in the pasuk. It says in the pasuk, Moshe comes to Paro, and Paro says, "Okay, finally, it's getting too hard for me with the Arbe. You know what? Me v'mi haholchem. I'll let you go. Who's going to go? Me v'mi haholchem." And Moshe responds, "Bin areinu v'zkenenu neilech. The areinu, the young, and the zikonenu neilech yichag v'ashem lanu." Then he goes on to say, "B'vanenu, our sons and our daughters, b'tzaynenu v'vkareinu neilech yichag v'ashem lanu." And Paro at the end says, Lechein, Lechuno Hagivorim, only the men, the adult men, Vivdu es Hashem ki oisoatem of action. What's going on? The question that we don't even think to ask this question because we're so brainwashed is after we get learn this when we're very young, why does it say mi va mi? Let him just say mi haholchem. Who's going? What's the double expression mi va mi? It's a poetic expression. So maybe he'll say, yeah, dibre Torah kloshim neyadam, but there's something more to it, mi va mi. So I saw somewhere the answer to the question, Paro wanted to know, okay, I'll let you all go, but I want to know, who is the Iker and who is the Tafel? In any society, there are always leaders and followers. There's always the main, the people who are going because they're the ones that are in charge, and the Nachschleppers, the people that come along to watch the show to provide support. You have the young and the old. Paro wanted to hear Moshe say, Zikoneinu and Ne'oreinu. He wanted to hear him say that the Iker, the people that are going to go out into the desert, the main people that are going to take the lead in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be the Zikanim. And the young people will be there to provide support, to watch, to learn, and then the Arenu. Paro was, that's not what Paro, but that's not what Moshe said. Paro didn't want me, who is the Iker? For me, and who is the Tofel? Moshe said, the Iker in the Avoida will be the Oreinu is the next generation. Bin Oreinu uvis Kainenu. The old folks, for them already it's a different generation. We are preparing here, the goal of Yitzias Mitzrayim is, as we, the whole theme is V'higadata Levincha. The whole essence when we spoke about Geula is to prepare for the next generation. Moshe says, you know who the Mi is? It's the new generation. And Vami, the old folks will also come along to watch the show, to teach them, to participate, but the ones that are going to take the lead in this service that we perform in the desert is going to be Bin Oreinu and then Zikeinenu.
Then he elaborates.
Okay, that's it. Okay, yeah, you have to elaborate. But the first two words are Bin Oreinu, and then Paro at the very end he says, only I don't want that. That's not what I wanted to hear. If you would have told me, Miva me is going to be the Iker, is going to be the Zikanim, and then the Orim, then alright, I'm not afraid. So the Zikanim will do the Avoda in the Midbar, the children will watch, and the children will say, this is bizarre. What kind of Avoda is this to sacrifice animals? Do we really need this religion? Do we really want this? And then you'll do what you want to do, you'll come back. I have nothing to worry about. The Zikanim already on in their years, and the there's never going to be a future for Klal Yisrael. When Moshe Rabbeinu tells Paro that the Iker are the children, they're the ones that are going to the Avodah, and the Zekanim are only going to be there to provide support and to teach them, Paro sees the Netzach Yisrael lo Yishaker. Paro acknowledges is that your plan is too good. Your plan is too good. It's a guarantee that you will always exist, and therefore I cannot allow you to go. So what this Dvar does, it opens up our eyes to a new translation of mi va mi. It's not just a general expression, who is going. I want to know who the Iker and who is the Tofel. There are times in life when the Iker are the Zikanim and the Tofel are the Orim. But there are times in life when the Iker has to be, when it comes to Avoda, when it comes to service, to then especially when we're going forward in the time of Geula, the Iker has to be the Na'arim. Okay, let's go to another idea. Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to go to the Egyptians and ask them to lend you, to borrow from the Egyptians clothing and assets. Rashi explains, Dabru Nabi Ozne Ha'am V'yish'alu V'mitzrayim Klei Chesed Klei Zahavu Smolos. Why? Rashi tells us, Shelo Yoimar Oiso Tzadik. Hashem says the time of Gula has come, the Jewish people are about to be redeemed, and I'm now about to fulfill the Avodom V'inui Oisam Arba Me'oshana. I don't want Avraham to say Va'avodam the inu oisan kien bohem, but the achrechein yetsu beruchush gadol lo kien bohem. Therefore, Hashem insisted that Moshe tell the Jewish people they should go to the Egyptians and they should borrow silver and gold and kalim, clothing, in order to go out beruchush gadol. What does it say in this week's parasha?
It doesn't say anything about
Vayomer. Let's see what it says. Koy Amar Hashem. Daber no beoznehom. This is in Perek Beis Pasik Perek Beis Pasik Beis. Daber no beoznehom. Yishalom ish meyeshu yishalu ish meyeshu yishalom meyeshu sa. You're right. Okay, fine. It says later on, when they left. Okay, whatever it is. It's not the point. Okay, it's not the point I want to make. The point is, Hashem demanded that Moshe Rabbeinu speak to Bnei Yisrael and they should borrow from the Egyptians assets. So they should go out beruchush gadol. The question is, why was it necessary that it should come to them b'derech she'ela, through borrowing? Why does the pasuk have to say that the people found chen in the eyes of the Egyptians and they came and they gave them, we're lending you gold and silver and clothing and all anything you possibly can want and we're giving to you? Why did it have to come about in this way? Why couldn't the fulfillment of this bracha come about through a law? Through just take it. We worked here for, we were slaves for 86 years. We were slaves, we were never paid. You have a duty to pay us for our labor. You stole all of our property, all of our assets, all of our wealth. You have a duty to go. There are fines, there are laws. Why did this have to come about? The achrei chen yetsu b'rechush gadol. Did it have to come about through chen? And why did it have to come about through she'ela, through borrowing? So I think there's a very simple answer. This thought was triggered by seeing something that was written by Rav Shimon Schwab. He alludes to this idea and he says, who are we dealing with over here? Who is Hashem concerned? Hashem is, I made a promise to Avraham Avinu, v'achrei chen yetsu b'rechush gadol. Let's say the promise would not have been made to Avraham Avinu. It would have been made to Yitzchak. It would have been made to Yaakov. It would have been made to Yosef. It would have been made to anyone else in Tanakh. Then Enochinami, the Acharei Chen Yetsu Beruchush Gadol. So you have to leave with as a wealthy multimillionaire. So you'll go out as a multimillionaire. How the money comes into your hands is irrelevant. But Avraham Avinu, from all of the Ishaya Tanakh, was the one who made the following statement. Melech Sodom, let's take a step back. Melech Sodom, after the battle, the four kings and the five kings, says, Avraham, you conquered the whole world. Tainli hanefesh, v'horechush kachloch. Take the money for yourself. Give me. Avram says, "In michut v'atzeroch nal im ekach mikol asherloch v'loy toimar ani hesharti es Avram." When you wanted to deal with rechush gadol on the standards of Avraham Avinu, it's not called a rechush gadol if you walk out as a multi-billionaire, but there's someone in the world will say, "Ani hesharti es Avram." That's not called a rechush gadol in the dictionary of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu, for the average person, if you're a multimillionaire, you're a multimillionaire. It doesn't matter if you've earned the money through hard labor or you won the lottery. It doesn't make a difference how the money came into your possession. I'm a multimillionaire. Avraham says, it's meaningless. That's not called rechush gadol if there's a person that says, I made him a millionaire. I taught him everything he knows. It's only because of me. Therefore, if Klal Yisrael would have taken the money because they were entitled to the money, we are slaves. We worked. We worked very hard. The Egyptians said, you know why the Jews are so rich? Because they work for us. They slave labor. They built Pisa and Ramses, so it was only right. And, you know, in history, we get credit. The reason why they are wealthy, because we get credit. They worked for us. We provided employment. We were equal, what's the expression today? Equal opportunity employer. We didn't discriminate against the Jews. We didn't discriminate against women. We didn't discriminate against anyone who has any disability. and we gave them a job, and they made money. V'ani hasharti hasavram. Egypt will say, it's us who gave them employment, we gave them parnasa, and they got what was deserved, they got what they wanted, and they went out as multi-billionaires. This is not called rechush gadol in the terms of Avram Avinu, if someone can make that statement. Therefore, it was absolutely necessary that the money came to them through she'ela. Can we please borrow? We want to borrow. We're going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're not asking money because we're entitled to this money. We're borrowing the money. And when they gave them the money, they gave it b'chein. What is chein? Matnas chinam. Matnas chinam, which means it's a gift. It's a gift because we like you. It's not because we've given it to you. We're giving it to you with kavana. It's as if you got the money on your own without anyone giving. This,
given it, if they knew that the ruse was still in effect.
It doesn't answer the question 100%, because ultimately they would kill, they die. And the Mela, after they died, they perished. And the Mela, there was no one to collect from. And also, they violated their terms of condition by chasing after Klal Yisrael. We were in the desert, so we would have come back. So they only ruined the fact that the money was not returned to them, was only because they ruined it for themselves. They did themselves in. But the money did not come into the possession.
They said they're leaving for good.
Okay, but in Hanan, but they made, okay, that's a question.
That's why it says it's
a question. But at least it takes away the sting of the question. Yeah. It doesn't answer the question fully, but the sting of the question is, what is this to borrow? The answer is, when the money comes into their possession, it has to come with an attitude, I'm not giving you something. You're taking what belongs to you. You're taking it in an oifan in a way where it's totally yours. It's not
al-manas
l'hachzer. So it's not considered to be that the Egyptians will one day say, we gave it to them. V'ani hasharti hasavram. It's a very, I think it's a very, it opens up the whole, when you connect this chazal, v'loy yoymar oyset tzadik, to the standards of Avraham Avinu, kach tainli hanefesh v'aruchush kach loch, and Avraham violently responds, imichut v'atzeroch nal, how dare you talk to me like that? That you think you're giving me the money, v'ani yasharti yas Avraham. Now also, in the English, you know, also, yeah?
Why does everybody translate when Shari has borrowed? Why didn't you translate?
Request? Yes. It's not grammatically correct. The word request, it would be a different form of the word. I don't know grammar, so I don't have the answer, but it's a different use of the word. To borrow. It doesn't mean to request. It's a different, the word would have been used in a different way. It means to borrow. Okay, now the Inyan voice owner should suggest a remes. What did Avram say in response to this? In the chut v'atzeroch nal. Chazal said, in reward for saying the word schut, his descendants were zoicha to the chut shel tzitzis. In reward for saying siroich nal, his children were zoicha to the ritzua shel tzvillin. It's not a coincidence that in this week's parasha we have the Mar parasha of tzvillin. When Klal Yisrael left, what did they leave? They left Mitzrayim wearing tzvillin. The first two parashas of Tzvillin appear, and according to the Medrash, they took the hides of the Korban Pesach. The Pesach was sacrificed. What did they do with all of the leather? They used the leather to fashion Tzvillin. They walked out with Tzvillin on their heads. What else did they do when they walked out? They walked out with matzah. Where was the matzah? The matzah was Tzrudois B'Simloisam Al Shechlam, on their garments. Were the garments tzitzis? It doesn't say anywhere that the garments were tzitzis, but you can't deny the fact that tzitzis, the garment alludes to tzitzis. It's tzurudos b'simlois samal shechmam. So it's interesting. Here Avraham Avinu says v'achrei chen yitzu b'ruchush gadol, and the way Avraham defined what are the terms of ruchush gadol in Avraham's vocabulary, ruchush gadol is imichut v'yatzeroch nal. Don't, I'm not going to take from you one penny. V'lois samarni hasharti yas Avraham, and that expression he was rewarded with tzitzis and tefillin. Both of those things, to some degree, are alluded to in Klal Yisrael. They walked out. The matzah was draped in their garments. And if we assume that Klal Yisrael were mekayim the Torah b'chol before the Torah was given, before Matan Torah was given, so they already had some degree of tzitzis on their garments, and that's what they used to wrap up the matzah, if such a thing is possible to say such a thing. And tefillin, you can't deny it. It's perish the pasta. They were wearing tefillin.
That's why I wanted to add, with that in mind, even though in Lech Lecha, the Bris Ben Absarim took place after the saving of Lot, but the reality is, chronologically, we have a couple of the Bris Ben Absarim works out before that story of Lot, so that since God said the Acher Chenye Tumer Chush Gadol, that's what maybe triggered him to say Lo Somar Ani Ashar Yes Avram. He wanted to wait till the Acher. He understood to wait till the Acher Chenye Tumer Chush Gadol.
Okay. Okay. Now I want to share with you a short vart from Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Yosheb Soloveitchik, he picks up on the pasuk right before the Gula. V'ho'ish Moshe Gadol Ma'ol Beinei.
Yes.
What is the Yehoshua's whole pasuk? The Ish Moshe was very.
Bnei
Avdei Faro Bnei Ha'am. The question is, what is the significance of this pasuk? That Moshe Rabbeinu, it's prestige. Let me see if I can find the pasuk. No, I don't know where it is. Mr. Rapp, we know where the pasuk is. Where is it?
Yud Aleph Gimel.
Yud Aleph Pasuk Gimel. Vayitein Hashem Eschena b'nei Mitzrayim v'gam ho'ish Moshe gadol ma'ol b'nei Mitzrayim v'nei Avdecha v'nei Ham. Rav Soloveitchik says a very powerful vart. In Egypt, and also it's true among the Umos Ha'olam, in order to be successful, you have to maintain a degree of mystique, which means you're God. Paro, from the very beginning, claimed that he was a god. Moshe Rabbeinu had to go out to the Ur, because the assumption was that if you're a god, you don't have to go to the Beis HaKisei. So Paro would disguise the fact that he goes to the Beis HaKisei every day going out to the Ur, and while he was in the Ur, he went to the Beis HaKisei. So the nature among the Umos of look about Christianity. So what is Yashka? Yashka is a god. He's the son of God. The Muhammad. Prophet. Dealing with people dealing in religion, in the secular world, in order for a person to rise to a position of authority, of prestige, it's assumed that he's moved al min ha'am. He's not a person. He's a deity. He's a god. He's not an ish. For the first time in Egypt, the first time in the secular world, did a nation come to see that it's possible to be a leader and to be respected and to be elevated and yet be an ish, to be a human being. This was a novelty for the Egyptians. They have Paro. Paro, they believe, or they were convinced, they were brainwashed to believe there's a god. And then they see there's a Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader of the Jewish people. 3 million people. There were at least 3 million Jews living in Egypt. That's quite a number. Who is their leader? Moshe. They looked at Moshe, the leader of Klal Yisrael. They looked at Paro, the leader of Egypt. Paro is a god, and no one likes him. He's not a nice guy. He has no social grace, no bedside manner, nothing. Moshe Rabbeinu is called here an Ish. Gam Ho'ish Moshe. The positive could have said Gam Moshe. Moshe was also Godol Me'od Be'eretz Mitzrayim Ve'enei Avdei Faro Ve'enei Ha'am. What they liked about Moshe Rabbeinu is they came to recognize that even a human being, an Ish, when he goes in the way of Hashem, he's Mekayim the Dvar Hashem, you could have prestige, stature, honor, greatness as a human being. You don't need to make believe you're a god and enter in and surround yourself with hocus pocus and different elements of mystique in order to appeal to separate yourself from the world. And this is a very powerful limud musar for many, many different, even like leaders in among us, is that true greatness is when you are in, you show yourself to be human, to be an ish. When you try to separate yourself and move down and surround yourself in hocus pocus, it doesn't always work well. Okay, let's go to tefillah. End of the parasha. Ish mitzri yisam. Same ish. Moshe was the human side of Moshe Rabbeinu. Even though Moshe Rabbeinu went to Shemayim 40 days, 40 nights, Moshe spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He spoke to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on a daily basis. But yet Moshe Rabbeinu, when he presented himself to the entire world, he presented himself as an ish. As an ish, a regular person. And this is what was his appeal. The Gamu Ish Moshe was Molei Chaim to the Egyptians. Okay, let's go to the end of the parish of Parish. Well, there are two parish of Tfilin. I saw a beautiful idea. I don't want to connect this to another idea. The first parish, you know, before we go, I have to tell you another. Before we get to that, I want to tell you another very quick one. This is a Gvaldig Moshe Mechavetz Chaim. When it comes to parish of Karban Pesach, we are introduced to the Ben Rasha. There are Dalet Banim in the Torah. Kineged Arba Banim Dibre Torah Kineged Chacham. One is the Tipish, the Rasha, and the Sheni Deil Lishal. Here in this week, by Parash of Karban Pesach, we learn about the Rasha. The Rasha is Mo Ha'avoida Hazos Lochem. And because he says the word Lochem, the Baal HaGadol says he was Moitziasam in a cloud, Kofa Be'ikar, and he had to knock out his teeth. Here's the Mashal. Marshall is, there were three people sitting in a park bench. It's not exactly what the Chofetz Chaim says, but it's pretty close. They were sitting on a park bench, and they were watching. There was a store across the street selling, I don't know, we'll make it in modern terms, selling electronics. Electronics store. And these three people are watching, and the guy comes out of the store. He's filled, both hands carrying boxes of expensive electronics, iPhones, iPads, computers, expense, good stuff. And he takes it and he throws it into the river. Probably, you know, a cold curry, City Field. You're not allowed to have internet. Okay. He wasn't from that group. He goes back into the store and he comes out with another load and he throws it into the ocean. And the two people are watching this, and one guy says to the other, I'm telling you, that guy lost his mind. He just threw out $10,000 worth of electronics. He must have nitrifadaitai, Rachmana Litzlan, he lost his mind. Fellow number two says, I know him, he didn't lose his mind. He's a kaisan. He's an angry person. He probably didn't win the lottery. So he's taking out his anger, his frustration. He goes into the store and he takes all the equipment and he throws it into the river. And they're fighting back and forth. One guy, he says he's nitrifadaitai. The other one says, no, he's a kaisan. And the third person is listening to the conversation. They turn to the third person and they say, who do you think is right? So the third guy says, I have no idea. Maybe you're right, maybe you're right. There's only one thing I know for sure by observing this person. There's only one thing I'm certain. He is not the owner, the Baal HaBas of this store. Because even if you're crazy, and even if you're a Baal Kaisan, if it's your money, if it's your assets, if it's your assets, you don't do something like this, no matter what you are. That's the mashal. What's the nimshal? The nimshal is the Rasha has quite a bit of chutzpah to say Mo ha'avoda hazos lochem. What is his motive? Why would he say? What is this all about? Why do we call this person a Rasha? What's the pshat we call it? You know, it's a very harsh word. We take this word very lightly. We throw around words today. Person doesn't smile at you, doesn't say good morning to you, we already call him a Rasha. But when the Chazal use the word Rasha, it's a very serious word. It means he was poreik all. The Chofetz Chaim says, this person, if he can ask, can make such a statement, Mo ha'avoda hazos lochem, it means it's not his store. It is an indication that he was poireik ol. He has completely abandoned religion, abandoned Yiddishkeit. If the person was somewhat connected to Yiddishkeit, I'm part of the club. I'm part of the group. So you could have questions, you can have issues, questions, complaints, there are things to discuss. But when a person says, Lo ha'avoida hazos lochem, when you make such a statement, what is all of this to you? Such a crude statement. What is all of this about? Who needs this? Chazal have come along and identified. I don't know if he's crazy. I don't know if he's angry. One thing is for sure. He is a Rasha. He has indicated he has no chelik in this Torah. Because this statement is a very harsh expression. And the Musa Haskell is that a person should never go that far. A person has questions, that there are things to question, there are things that your person is disturbed, but you should never go that far. So I want to get one last one before we conclude. We have two parashios of Tefillin. The first parashios, there's a very subtle difference between the two parashios. In the first parashio of Tefillin, it begins, V'yoki yiviyacha Hashem alayrit ha'kanani kasher, ka'asher. And the second parasha I skipped. First parasha is Kadesh Lichol Bukhor, Pentacle Rechem. Okay, Vayoyim, Vayoki Vyacha, Hashem Elokecha, Alaritz Akinani, Vachiti Vemor, Asher Nishpa Lavosecha Lo Seslach. In the first parasha of Tefillin, when we describe the Shavua that Hashem made to the Avos, it says, Asher Nishpa. There is no Chaf. In the second parsha, it says, V'yoki v'yacha, v'chulu v'chulu, alere tzakrani, ka'asher, nishba l'cha v'lavosech u'nesanalach. Question, why in the first parsha is the chaf missing, and why in the second parsha is the chaf present? In the first parsha, it says, asher, nishba, Hashem, l'avosech, asher, nishba, l'Hashem, l'avosech u'nesanalach. And the second one is, ka'asher. So the Farshim answer, the difference is, when it says Asher, it's the real deal. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us the land because we deserve the land. Asher means you deserve it. When it's written Kasher, that is an indication you don't really deserve Eretz Yisrael because you're not doing the mitzvos the way you should. This that I allow you to live in the land, it's Kasher, Chof HaDimyon. It's Ki'ilu, I have fulfilled my promise, but I'm not satisfied. This subtle difference answers all the questions in the difference between the two parashiyos. So the first parasha, the first parasha, when we describe Yetzias Mitzrayim, it says, V'igadata levincha, bayamahu le'mar, ba'avur zeh, asa Hashem li b'tzeisi mimitzrayim. It's in order to do the mitzvos. In the second parasha, it says, in much harsher terms, it says, it was a punishment to the Egyptians. It's an entirely different connotation. In the first parasha, when we have the word Asher without the Chaf, it's because we are Mekayim, the mitzvahs of the Torah, the way we should. Hashem has truly fulfilled His promise, and therefore, it's bavur zeh. We focus on the positive. In the second parasha, it's only kasher, which we're not doing 100%. Then we focus on the negative. It's not because we really deserve it. It was b'chozeg yad. Now, the only point I want to make over here, there's another very slight difference. In the first parasha, the children do not ask questions. V'igadata levincha, you teach your children. In the second parasha, it's a very disturbing pasuk. It says, the tam, it's the b'hoyok yisholcha vincha mochar leymar, Mazos. This is the question of the time. This answer explains the difference. You can fool some of the people for some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all of the time. A child observes a parent. When a child observes a parent living a life where he deserves to live in Eretz Yisrael without the chof, there are no questions. I see my parents are tzaddikim. They're living in the land as a fulfillment. There are no questions. The parent teaches the child. But if Rachmana Litzlan, the parent, is not 100%, the parent is a good parent, he's a good person, but he's not being mekayim the mitzvot to the degree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands of him. Hashem says, not everyone is perfect, so I'll let you live in Eretz Yisrael ka'asher, with the chof ha-dimyon. It's not, you don't really deserve that I shall fulfill the promise, but I made the promise, so it's going to be like. But if you're living a double life, you're not living, you're not 100%. When the parents are not living a life that's 100%, the children very quickly pick up upon it. And in this instance, what happens? V'hoya ki yish'olcha vincha mochar lemar mazos. The child is the one that's able to detect that it's not an asher, it's ka'asher. And then you're in trouble. And then when he starts asking questions, mazos, you're going to have to come up with good answers. But all of the good answers, all of the king's horse and all the king's men, it can't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. It's not going to touch upon the real answer. The real answer is because I'm not an asher. I'm only a ka'asher. It's a very subtle difference, but it opens up a whole new understanding of the difference between the two parashas. Okay, have a good shot.